Hello, I'm Doreena Allen from the Ballymaloe Cookery School, and I'm just about to make you an Irish soda bread. So it's so quick and easy, you can't imagine. But the first thing you need to do is to turn on the oven and have the oven fully preheated. So that would be at 450 Fahrenheit. And then get yourself a nice big wide.
Now this is what it looks like after 20 minutes, beautifully and caramelized. The smells are fantastic from the cloves and the brown sugar and the mustard. So the most important thing about this, don't be tempted to slice it straight away. You must let it rest.
And then just kind of mix them all together. So that's my herbs all set and ready to go. Now, the interesting thing about Theodora's traditional recipe when it comes to beef is that she uses beef dripping. And beef dripping is something that, as an ingredient, has really fallen out of favour because it's been replaced with much more healthy oils like sunflower or rape.
The phenomenon of cookery shows has just grown and grown. I was really puzzling over this. The less time we spend cooking ourselves, the more time we seem to spend watching other people cook on television. Food, of course, that we never get to eat. You know, there are a lot of things in modern life we no longer do for ourselves, that we've outsourced to corporations. But we don't watch TV about them. Food is different. There's something that draws us back to the kitchen each time. And I think some of it has to do with the fact that we all have powerful memories of eating. Cooked for by our mothers, our fathers, our grandparents. That act of generosity and love, I think, is still memorable for most of us and very powerful. It really does go deep.
My mother's 81 and I remember the first day I came home from college and I made spaghetti bolognese. What was this strange thing? And spaghetti, I remember it so well, standing there and cooking it, I thought it was a great one. And she said, oh, that's strange food, you know what I mean? And it was really funny the other day I was down with her and she said, oh, I really fancy an Indian. And I looked at her and I just burst out laughing. I said, Kitty, you remember the first time I made spaghetti bolognese in this house? When the laughs and the tumors, I went off and got her an Indian, you know? She was having tikka masala or something like that. And I was saying, oh my.
Mag Kerwin is the wife of a seventh generation fish farmer and the driving force behind the Twitter hashtag EatTrout. She has had her share of grievances about Irish food culture.
I think we as a nation have gone past the whole mixed grill and chicken Maryland and that kind of era where we didn't know what food is. But I think good food now, if I go to a festival and I bring my food truck, I would do something like a barbecued wrap. And we do, that's one thing we do, for example, a barbecue wrap with green salad and a beetroot mayonnaise and a grilled trout in it. And it's lovely, it's a bit different, it's a bit contemporary. It's really good food and it tastes amazing, right? But you'll find that the Irish person, the normal Joe Stuff, not the so-called foodies, the majority of the Irish people, they go, what they want to eat is burger and chips. It's what they know. Or a pancake with chocolate sauce. They don't really know or appreciate or want that food. You go to Bloom with that food truck and everybody wants to eat it because their food is who understand, you know, that's where your target is. You go to the craft fair and they understand really good food and they buy your products. Was I think the majority of Irish people, but is it changing? Yeah, I think to a certain target market, with a certain category of young people who are interested in what they eat and where their food comes from, and that's changing, you know, and it's companies like ours that are helping to make that change as we try and educate.
Nutritionist Laura Fitzgerald is particularly concerned with Ireland's growing obesity epidemic.
Irish people definitely have a problem with healthy eating at the minute. Things I've been seeing that are becoming more and more common over the years are things like diabetes, weight issues, over and underweight. Heart disease is something that we're seeing more common now. The rates are increasing, and also the age that we're seeing people coming in with these illnesses is going down. From a nutritional point of view, I'm seeing more and more kids coming in carrying extra weight, facing into these problems unless they actually change the lifestyle that they're leading that's causing these issues.
Laura has begun to see an even more worrying trend developing in the brain chemistry of Irish children.
So what you're seeing now is a lot of snacks, fizzy drinks, sugary chocolates, sugary crisps. There's sugar in all of those. In fact, food producers will look to have a certain amount of sugar. It's called the addiction point. So it would taste a certain way and it would please the brain in such a way that it actually is addictive, and they aim for that so that you're coming back for their product every time. It's very difficult for people to change, particularly when they grow up in that environment where, you know, the parent is now eating that way. They're introducing the child to that lifestyle. It's almost like indoctrination. It's just what they're used to. So to change out of that lifestyle is very, very difficult. especially because of the addictive nature of the sugary foods. And it's very easy as well. They make it much easier to eat unhealthy than to, you know, prepare a healthy meal, for example, with vegetables, meat, etc.
I had been feeling very, very tired, chronic fatigue really, which isn't like me, and very, very thirsty. So I went to my doctor because I suspected that I had diabetes, because I'm 55 years of age and I am overweight. Had the usual blood tests done and it was confirmed 3 weeks ago.
Bernadette Collinan was suffering from diabetic symptoms for years before she worked up the courage to tell her doctor. Now confined to a sedentary existence, she regrets taking a relaxed attitude to diet and fitness in her younger days.
I didn't really have a weight problem until, I suppose, my early 30s, my weight started to gain. I was working shift work and couldn't have time really for sports, and really I was retired after fulfilling a day's work. So that was it. So from my 30s, it has steadily gained. And now I am obviously heavier than I've ever been, with the result that I'm now disabled and things that other health issues due to the diabetes, which would be my eyes are starting to fail slightly, which is a big worry because I'm an avid reader.
Bernadette believes that Irish food culture is more in crisis than ever, and thinks that the cost of healthy food could be part of the problem.
I actually think that nowadays, people, young married couple now, they're not educated enough. They don't know that you can buy a cheaper cut of meat and just dinner with it from scratch. I think they have been reared with the freezer to oven. I doubt that 50% of them would know how to handle raw meat. Maybe now it's a sweeping generality, but I would think that that would be the form now. It's disgraceful. The health food shops, while they offer a wide variety of brilliant produce, it's just the cost is prohibitive.
Organic farmer Deirdre O'Sullivan takes a break from her busy market stall to chat. She thinks that as opposed to prices, it is Ireland's increasing modernity that has put health at risk.
If you look back, say, to when I was growing up, or my parents were growing up, the percentage of the household income that was spent on food was 80-90%. Now it's about 15%. So it's, you see, people think, oh, she only has 50 euros to spend on food. But actually, if you look at the household budget, what is the rest of the money going on? And why do you think it's more important to have like 20 euros a week for mobile phone credit than only 50 euros to feed five children? You know, that you have to have the Sky television and you have to have this and you have to have that. So it's your priority. And if you decide that your priority is mobile phones or trips to the cinema or McDonald's food or whatever it is, well then, you know, as long as you're aware of the consequences of feeding your children bad food.
But some say that Ireland is stuck in the past when it comes to modern methods of farming.
Fishing is free. It's unusual because it's in many occasions, it's sixth, seventh, even eighth generation of fishermen. So it's not, you're not bringing that innovation, that kind of fresh look at stuff. My husband, Ger, farms the fish the way he, I suppose, the way his father did. And like, there's very little change in terms of where it's happened. You know, but we have plans to make those changes. But not because he wants to make the change. He's happy to do what he always did. But he'll have what he always had. And lots of people are happy with that. The fishing industry, there's very little in terms of innovation, in terms of packaging, in terms of MPD, in terms of, you know, adding value. It's happening now in like the likes of Green Island, the likes of some, you know, Cahans and Cork, and it's happening in terms of a number of companies. But we're not there because we don't have the consumers in Ireland. We also don't have the volume of fish. This country could be a leading knowledge in terms of fish. Things like, you know, there's Faroe Islands, there's Scotland, New Zealand, what they're doing with fish compared to what we're doing, first of all, in terms of production, and secondly, in terms of adding value and being really and truly innovative.
I think farmers have it very, very difficult because they're heavily subsidised by the government, and a lot of them, I wouldn't say they're lazy, but many, many farmers, particularly the older generation, are happy to get their cheque and just continue to do what they do. Most of the farmers that we work with are part of a generation that want to sell their product direct, because before the farmer produced the product, it went to an abattoir, someone else killed it, then it was transported to somewhere else, and someone else sold it to the supermarket. So you've got about five people to get paid before it gets to the supermarket, and then unfortunately the farmer's getting the least amount of money, and the supermarket gets the most amount of money.
Michelin-starred chef JP McMahon agrees that innovation needs to be addressed in the Irish farming economy.
Farmers need to start selling direct or to start cutting the chain. So whether it's building their own abattoir so they kill the animal rather than sending it off. Most of the small abattoirs in Ireland have been closed down because I think in the 60s and 70s there was an ideal where, oh God, we can be centralised and we'll, like, the farmer will just do one thing and then it'll go on to another. And so it's very hard to get back that skill. I think if the government keep on subsidising everything, then the farmers have no incentive to do anything. And like, it's very hard to change someone where you're just giving them a cheque every week. Every pig sold in Ireland at the moment is sold at a 20 euro loss, and the government are giving that 20 euro back to the farmer. So it's like a loss that's being hidden. And so the market is unsustainable. Same with beef. Farmer's not making money. It's the government is giving the farmer money to produce the cow. He's making a little bit of money. So it's like if that was a business, it would just go out of business. But it's not going to go out of business because people need to eat food. So the government are going to keep subsidising pork farmers. But most pork sold in Ireland is sold at a loss.
But with innovation comes other really very frightening issues, like Ireland has seen with epidemics like BSE and foot and mouth disease, leaving the farming communities tarnished in recent years.
People now are not as ignorant about food and where it comes from. The foot and mouth in particular, and all of those mad cow disease, the BSE crisis, all of that. Chickens that are fed in disgusting confined things. And really, to be a responsible consumer, you should be aware that the animal that you're eating, you should respect it, that it has given its life for you. I'd like it to have lived in a reasonable condition. When that BSE crisis hit, I didn't eat beef for 4 years. I just took it out of our diet. So I try and eat a good variety now. Try buy local, try buy Irish. I try and support Irish if I can. I don't know, is everybody the same way? But I think people now are not as ignorant about food and where it comes from. It's changing.
Irish Farm Inspector Joe Burke is eager to assure the public that Irish farms and their produce are audited regularly.
You know, obviously through the 1990s there were issues there where BSE related problems. We had to reassure consumers with regard to the traceability, the origin of the product, with regard to the production practices as well too on the farms, the feed that was being employed there, environmental kind of factors as well too, that the farmer was doing his best in order to prevent pollution or any kind of issues like that. You know, we're looking as closely as possible at the whole supply chain to make sure everything is in order. As I said, the key areas really within it, you want to be able to reassure the consumer that the food that they're eating is safe and it's produced in a manner that is respecting animal welfare, the environment, obviously with regard to medicine use as well too, that farmers who, for example, if they have a sick animal and that animal is treated, that the withdrawal periods of any medicines are fully adhered to. And, you know, there's a very high rate of compliance among Irish farmers. They're doing a really good job anyway. Irish beef is of top quality. It compares in quality, in eating quality, as well as in, you know, the standards of Irish farms with anything that's to be found anywhere else in the world.
Nevertheless, not all farms are what they seem to be.
I put it up on Twitter about Tesco's farms. I think it was seen by 125,000 people, like I said, 18,000. It's the most retweets I've ever had on a tweet, so it must really upset people. Because you have farmers making no money, and then Tesco can just make up a farm, like Woodside Farms, and have chicken from Copenhagen that's costing a euro or something. And then people really think, when they buy it, that, oh, I'm helping a farmer, and there isn't any farm. It's not even just one supermarket, they're all at it. So I think the governments are afraid to intervene because they're the ones that are producing the jobs and they're producing tax and all of those things. So it's, I think it's a bit of a mess. Like a chicken should cost roughly somewhere between 8 and 12 euro, because to buy a day old chicken is a euro. So it's not possible to produce a chicken and sell it at 3 euro, which is, it's not economically possible. So to grow that chicken properly and to give it a certain quality of life, it will end up costing between 8 and 12 euro. But to be able to buy a chicken for 3 euro, and then people get used to buying chickens for 3 euro, and then we kill about 180,000 a day in Ireland. So like, it's not, I don't think it's an excuse anymore to say, oh, we have to buy the cheap chicken because everybody wants chicken you have to have your chicken sandwich at 5 euro or that. So, I mean, we have, I think it's our chicken sandwich in the pub is 8 euro 50, and like, and people buy it, and I think it's like, it's the price it should be, as opposed to getting a chicken sandwich for 3.50, and then you're going, like, if you saw actually how that chicken was produced, I don't think you'd eat.
What did you get for your lunch today?
I just got chicken sandwich from across the road.
What do you have for your lunch?
I had a chicken sandwich.
What did you have for your lunch?
I had chicken and mashed potatoes.
Food producers and supermarkets face a growing resentment from the Irish public around what they choose to sell and how they try to sell it.
We all know that marketing is a huge thing. We all know that things at eye level are the cheapest and they're making the most markup on. Unless you are a canny shopper and you know. And look, sometimes you just don't care. You just want to get in and get out as fast as possible. A huge drive now with sugar, simply because obesity is a huge, huge problem in society. England now have a massive drive on to reduce sugar. If you see the likes of McDonald's trying to offer sugar-free stuff, you know that it's a huge problem. They're canny, they're savvy, they can see the market. They know that people are more aware now. They know that the governments, which is about time, are educating their masses. And, you know, they can see the writing on the wall, but it's an awful pity that it's because people are dying that they're brought to their knees. Let's face it, they're not doing it because they want to, they're doing it because they have to.
Some believe that the matter of food needs to be taken a lot more seriously.
Trying to make food a subject, I mean, it has to happen at primary level, having food as an academic subject in its own right. And I think that's important because you eat three times a day. And if you have a population who are more clued in to where their food comes from, as opposed to just being a trend, like, oh, no, okay, organic's in trend, let's be organic, or wild food's in trend, let's get some wild stuff. So, I mean, of course, you can lobby the government, but they need to change the law.
Fear has increased around the levels of potentially toxic ingredients that are added to food to make it look, feel and taste better, while staying fresh for an extraordinary length of time. With the same chemicals using a stack of different names, they are now more difficult to spot than ever before.
There's two factors. There's genetically modified food, and then there's also foods that are sprayed with pesticides. So those are chemicals that are designed to manage pests through the growing process. They're not meant to be in the human body. They're not natural. You could look at the history of human beings, how they evolved. It's really only in the last 100 years, you could probably even say more like 60 or 70, that it's been heavily used. But the industries that are producing our food now are doing this because it's saving them money. They can produce more crop. You know, that's great for them. It's great for business. It's great for money. But is it great for health? We don't know. We don't know what the long-term effects of that are going to be. And personally, I would recommend avoiding that. As well as the chemicals used in growing the food, you're also seeing now artificial sweeteners. So things like aspartame, and that falls under a couple of different names. You know, a few years back, it would have been as simple as saying, you know, avoid aspartame, which is used mostly for diet sodas. You'll also see it in low-fat yogurts, low-fat bars, all the low-fat diet foods that have been marketed as good for you. They will have artificial sweeteners in them. And again, the names are changing, so they make it very difficult for customers. You have to be really vigilant at reading ingredient lists. And when you're not in the habit of that, it's very difficult to teach people. One of the long-term side effects of aspartame, a low-fat sweetener, is weight gain. It confuses the body so much that, yes, you may get some weight loss initially, but over time you're actually looking at weight gain. So really it's about natural foods, you know, no artificial sweeteners. If there's something on a label that you can't pronounce, I say stay away from it.
Influencers in the news and media scene are encouraging those that follow them to engage in a diet free from gluten, dairy, sugar and all additives, known as eating clean. Paula Donoghue of Bord Bia is a consumer trends analyst.
It's come up in the news and the media and the bloggers are definitely, there's a lot of focus on it. Deliciously Ella, she's huge popularity in the UK. They said, no, you're going to have to take medicine for the rest of your life. You're going to have chronic fatigue. And she said, no, I'm going to do something about it myself. Changed her diet, clean living, and she looks amazing. Loads of energy. People are more interested in food. They're researching food. People in the past, when we were going on holidays or buying cars, we'd be researching. Now people are now researching food before they buy it. They're looking to understand where it's coming from. They absolutely want transparency. And they want to know where their food's coming from, where the ingredients are coming from. People are looking at the back of the packs. And it's not enough for companies just to tell them what they want to know. They need to know everything. They want to know everything. So it's very important. Having said that, it doesn't mean mass market are eating organic or are eating raw foods. It's still quite small. Figures we'd have is about 1 in 4 are purchasing organic every week, which has grown, which is increasing. But, you know, that's not absolute mass market because it's not affordable for everyone.
Small organic and free-range farmers should get more subsidies, so they should be encouraged. There's only 2% of farms in Ireland are organic. The European average is 5%. It should be way higher. I do think we should be leading the way. We have a really green country. We have really strict laws when it comes to food. I think like we have really good laws when it comes to food as well. So we should be trying to put people in place to produce better food.
JP explains the concept of terroir, a French word literally meaning from the land, and how it has become a foundation for his Galwegian restaurant, Anir.
In recent years, you could say it started in Copenhagen and trying to apply certain time and place to food. The way that we do it in Anir is we try and, your seasonal is the first thing, and the second thing is that you try and look at what grows here, and then also what's from here, oats or barley. There's loads of things that would have been grown in Ireland.
JP explains how terroir cooking supports Irish food systems from the bottom up.
We try and restrict ourselves in and near, but we apply the same principles in relation to all of the meat and fish we buy and most of the vegetables that we buy. There's a very pragmatic thing to it in the sense that if you're buying from someone you know, then they're benefiting it and you keep the money in the loop in the local economy.
Some Irish people have begun to cook again as a form of healthy and wholesome entertainment.
We did a home baking presentation last week to companies and it was looking at how home baking has evolved in Ireland the last number of years and looking at home baking in 2016. And that's seen huge changes because, as you say, kind of our ancestors, relatives before would have baked out a necessity every day. It was bread they made. It was laboursome. They didn't have any of the Kenwood mixers or anything like that. You know, it was all done by hand, laboursome, had to do it. And then you fast forward 100 years on and baking has become this fun, kind of sexy, you know, leisure activity that people are doing, and you've got Nigella fronting things, you know. So that's changed. That's I would say that certainly struck me as how things have changed. The use of technology has helped that. Also, the kind of Irishness, a lot of the ingredients now that we use in baking, sugar, you know, you can't get in Ireland as well. That's an issue where industries have kind of died out.
But are all of the Irish ingredients available in supermarkets really as they seem?
The only flours you can get in Ireland are like rye and spelt and wholemeal. All of the flour, it might be milled in Ireland, but it could be a product of France or it could be a product of another country. People aren't even aware what stuff is Irish. And I think labelling laws come into place as well. And like charvel, I think, is produced in Germany. The cheese, like if you look at the back, it's a very, very small little symbol and it's says where it's from. When you drive into Charvel, there's a big fucking cow there, and he's like, say cheese. And there was no cheese produced in Charvel. I think it's produced, I'm fairly sure it's produced in Germany. Dubliner is produced in England. A lot of people, when they go into the shop, they're like, oh, I must buy organic. And then the organic vegetables are coming from Spain. It should be more obvious, I think, for the consumer. The labelling should be much more apparent. It can't just be a tiny little symbol at the back.
In order to get the best product, we are advised by chefs, nutritionists and consumer experts alike to keep it simple.
You think about it, you're putting it into your body, you're putting it into your family's body, you're putting it on the table. It's really important.
We have a great quality of food. If you look at Irish butter, it's got a lovely yellow colour, and that's due to the fact that we have such good grass quality and the fact that the cows are grazing for, you know, as much of the year as possible. So I would always say as much as you can Irish, and very much where possible locally.
Meanwhile, Irish producers are advised to state their Irishness to the consumer, a trademark which is fast becoming synonymous with quality.
It's like any person, you know, people become more interesting, they know more about you, you know, and the more personal you can be. And you could have two loaves of bread on the shelf, you know what I mean? They're identical, and what's going to separate them apart is like how they're made, where they're come from, who puts the thought into it. You know, that's going to make the difference, because so many products can be the absolute same and can turn into complete commodity category. But why should I buy your loaf of bread over someone's else? Tell me something, what's different, what's unique, because then it makes me look good. So when I bring that home, I go, well, you know, I got this bread and it's from this lady down the road and the recipe is 50 years old, and you know, it's all good. It's just all we love our stories in Ireland. That's still the case. We're a bunch of storytellers, and we kind of want to show off as well.
The Irish countryside has seen its fair share of troubles. However, it is the very modern warfare of business that seems to be its most troubling issue. Ireland's food economy has grown tremendously through the recession, and in this global market is our most valuable item of trade. In true Irish fashion, are we still refusing to accept the compliment?